Blog Talk Radio.
Vayan uno a uno los amigos,
y acribillen mi pedazo de conciencia.
To the Garden of Enlightenment with Lou Wildove and Grey Eyes Smith.
And tonight's show is brought to you by a group on altpoetry.com called Late Night Poets. And we also have anthologies available on Amazon.com under the same moniker of Late Night Poets. So please feel free to check those out and help support these shows. And tonight's show is based on open poetry and some contest pieces. So that will be the gist of tonight's show. And I'm going to check the studio here real quick. Oh, we have a caller. Hello and welcome, Sir Laurent. How are you?
Good evening, Gray. Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you. Great to hear your voice. Okay, here. So I'm going to post the first poem, if you wouldn't mind reading this, Lauren. That would be great.
All right.
Thank you, sir.
This is called Despite the Times, Such Love to Bring Upon the First Days of Spring by Jordan Zuniga. Through bitter chills of winter's scorn, springs forth in time, something new is born. For what we hope for comes as the season shall bring upon the first days of spring. The touch of cold, the scorn of the blizzard's rage. Through death, disease, and eldest age, its fight was strong, prolonged, though its end was nigh. It gasps, it breathes, and releases a sigh. Her beauty unmatched, all could surely tell. Her glow, her love, her name was Belle. To strength carried, she played her part. Such love she gave, so sweet from her heart. Despite the season, despite the reasons, through treachery and betrayal, despite heinous treasons, sunny skies are cold as snow, her joy would live. Such love for me she poured to give. The warmth of the sun to melt the snow, a heart so warm that love would grow. For spring's first beat is when my hope is born. It honors winter's last breath, its light, its scorn. May Lord Jesus Christ have all the glory. End poem.
Beautiful read, Laurent. And, you know, that was a deeply powerful poem on a passionate love for his partner here. And, you know, you can feel this as her beauty unmatched, all surely could tell. Her glow, her love, her name was Belle. The strength she carried, she played her part. Such love she gave, so sweet from her heart. Yeah, just a beautiful person by the sound of it. Yeah, absolutely beautiful poem. What did you think, Lauren?
Well, I've got to agree with you. The way that he feels about her, what she does for him, what hopes for from a lover, and he takes it into the season, which is scorn, and then springs forth in time, something new is born. I like the way Jordan writes about the touch of cold, the scorn, the blizzard's rage. He animates the weather as surely as he animates his love, Belle. And it doesn't seem to be a faith song, or a faith poem, rather, until you get to the last, when he gives all the glory to Jesus. And I guess that's up to the individual reader. A great poem.
Absolutely. Yeah, thank you. And I'd like to welcome Lee Wildup to the show. Hello, Lee.
Hey, Gray. Hi, Lauren. Long time no hear from you. Good to hear from you. It was wonderful to hear you reading poetry.
Hey, Lee.
Hey.
So, did you get to hear his read?
Yes, I did. And he did a beautiful job in reading Jordan Zuniga's poem. This is the first time I've heard, I've heard his poetry read or read his poetry. And what I really... Sorry. I don't know if I'm going to be able to comment. What I liked about this poem was, you know, how this could have been a woman. It could be Mother Nature. He says that this was it was a spiritual poem for him, and, you know, that he loved and believed in nature. And I liked how he took us through the winter scorn, and then, you know, that he talks about how the blizzards just rage. And he says, but, you know, her beauty was unmatched. And I thought that was just gorgeous. You know, it says that strength carried her heart. She loved, she gave so sweet from her heart. And despite the season, despite the reason, through treachery and betrayal, despite heinous treason, it says that the sunny skies and the coldest snow, her joy would live. Such love for me she poured to give. I just thought that was just gorgeous, how he personified Mother Nature.
Yeah, absolutely. Beautiful comment, Lydia. Thank you. And Naomi, welcome to the show.
Hello,
hey,
hello, everyone. Hi, Lulu.
Welcome,
hi,
welcome. Hi, sweetie.
Hi, Gray.
Hi, Naomi.
Hello, Naomi.
Hi. Nice to hear you, Laha.
Agreed.
Did you get a chance to hear Laurent read?
Yeah, a bit of it. I'm just trying to catch up reading it here. I heard Laurent's wonderful comment, too, and then Louis. He goes through the seasons beautifully, you know, touches on nature wonderfully. I think, you can interpret this poem in different ways. You can relate to it in different ways, you know, as if you're like, for example, if you're a big believer in the Christianity or a born-again Christian or something, you could take it as, you know, God, or, you know, if you're Catholic, you take it as maybe Mary. And, you know, but he just, or like Louis said, just Mother Nature also. And I was thinking about, you know, just being marriage, you know. He says the touch of cold, the scorn of the blizzard rage through death, disease, and eldest age, its fight was strong. So, you know, when you're bond in marriage, you're supposed to stay strong through all these, you know, through the good and all the bad. So I said, I was thinking to myself, you know, maybe this could be about marriage too. So I guess it can be what the beauty of this poem is, that you can take it and relate it to yourself, you know. So just a wonderful right here.
Absolutely. Thank you, Naomi. Great comment. Okay, do you have the next write-up, if you wouldn't mind, please?
Did I comment on the wrong poem?
No.
Is it by Kay?
Oh.
Yes.
Okay. All right. I thought I did. And this one is by a wonderful poetess. Her name is Kay. And this is titled Delicate Whispers of Lavender Breeze. She didn't have a recording, Gray?
No.
She usually does. Okay. The delicate whisper of lavender breezes, singing a tune of serenity. Her fragrance smelling as sweet as baby's breath. Wisping beauty speaks only of love, not hate. Breathe in her beauty. Soak up her calm presence that will soothe your weary soul. For her sunshine beauty is only here to uplift and inspire in her forgiving nature that speaks truth. End poem.
Absolutely beautiful. Beautiful read, Louis. And, you know, this is a beautiful poem that paints a very serene picture of this lavender field and the beauty that exists there and the light that it brings, you know, and her forgiving nature, you know, speaks truth. I mean, lavender is a relaxing scent, and I thought she captured the essence of lavender beautifully. What did you think, Laurent?
love any comparison to a baby's breath, because there's very few things that are sweeter or more welcome than a child breathing. Breath in her beauty, soak up her calm presence that will soothe your weary soul. That is beautifully stated, because the sunshine beauty that is there only to uplift and inspire, speaking only of love, not hate, and a forgiving nature that speaks truth. There's a balance there between only speaking truth that uplifts and inspires and not anything else. Beautifully done.
Great comment, Lauren. Thank you. And Naomi, what are your thoughts?
Oh, yeah, I just love this. I love Lena's comment, too. It's so insightful. You know, it just starts out so beautifully. The delicate whispers of lavender breezes sing a tune of serenity. You know, it's just beautiful from the start, and it doesn't let up, you know. But Kay always writes so beautifully. Yeah, it's light, it's airy, it's just, you know, just has this tenderness about it that I just love. And, you know, I think it gives us hope to a beautiful future. I feel hope in this poem. So just a beautiful, beautiful light here.
Thank you, Naomi. And Louise, what are your thoughts?
You know, I agree with everybody that this is such a beautiful poem. Lavender tends to transcend the soul and allows the soul to be brought into peace and to harmony, to watch it swing in the wild or in your garden, and to have that perfume just surround you just brings back so many memories. And, you know, and then she's, you know, one of the things that she says here, she says, take the time, because, you know, with our life so hectic all the time, she says, take the time to take in the beauty and soak up her calm presence to soothe your weary soul. So, you know, this is a, you know, a way that we can find tranquility. Beautiful, beautiful poem.
Great comment. Thank you to you. Okay, Naomi, I have the next poem up, if you wouldn't mind, please. It's by Claps and Scribbles.
Okay. Scraps and Scribbles, find out what they mean. I saw a tree, its blossoms, cherry fire, its naked branches not yet burning green, a portrait of the heat of spring's desire to find a mate and find out what they mean. This beacon tree, its purpled ruby lamps, each one a symbol for a yearning heart, with steering heat and blood towards the tamp that's tied us all together since the start. This tree was planted by some goddess, sure, to lure to her the mortal of her dreams. For even she inflicted needs the cure to cool her when the blood will turn to steam. The night comes on, the moon is one big sigh. These beacons mix, set fire to the sky. End poem.
Beautiful read, Naomi. And such a pretty poem, you know. It describes the blossoms of the cherry just wonderfully. You know, the tree's on fire with this beauty. And I thought it was fantastically written. What did you think, Lauren?
I'll second what you just said. And it's almost as if this poem is based on some kind of a legend, because it states, a portrait of the heat of spring's desire to find a mate and find out what they mean, referring to the blossoms, which are cherry fire. And then the reference to the goddess, the tree was planted by some goddess, sure, to lure to her the mortal of her dreams, for even she inflicted needs the cure to cool her, and the blood will turn to steam. It's almost as if the blooms are a stand-in for a tree that lures lovers to this goddess. It's beautifully done.
A wonderful comment, Lauren. Thank you. And Lee, what are your thoughts?
You know, that was such a beautiful read, and, you know, and this is such a beautiful poem. You know, he talks about to find out what the meaning of different things and traditions of the people, of nature. And, you know, what I like about here, these cherry fire blossoms, they are so red. It looks, there's a difference between cherry fire blossoms and the cherry tree blossoms. They're two different trees. Those tend to be pink, but these tend to be just, they burn the sky. And when you see them line a street, it feels like you're on another planet in a different place. And, you know, so I really enjoyed where he's, you know, he personified the tree. And also that it also affects humans just like spring has desire. It says, so do we for our yearning heart. And, you know, and it, like he said, it had to be planted by some goddess. I don't know if there's a story that goes with that, but I'll have to look it up.
Great comment, Lou. Thank you. And Naomi, what are your thoughts?
That was so interesting, Lou, what you just said. I didn't know that there was two kinds of cherry trees or, you know, maybe there's more. I don't know. You mentioned two, but I didn't know that at all because we just have the pink ones here.
No, they're fire red.
Oh, yeah. Why, that would be so cool.
Beautiful.
Oh, my. So I understand so more now, you know, and all the beauty. I love the line, this beacon tree. It's purple ruby lamps, each one a symbol for a yearning heart. You know, that's beautiful right there. You know, like each of those, you know, those budding, you know, reddish or purplish ruby, like to be described as a lamp and a symbol for a yearning heart. I thought that was just amazing that he put that in there. Yeah, just an amazing, amazing write all through here.
Excellent comment. Thank you. And, So that's an interesting fact that there's a cherry fire tree. I never heard that before. So thank you for sharing that, Leah. Okay, Laurent got dropped, and he's back. Okay. And we have Bobby to welcome as well. Welcome back, Laurent, and welcome to the show, Bobby.
Good evening.
Hi, Bobby.
Well, welcome to the show, Bobby. Since you're calling in, maybe you wouldn't mind reading for me?
I mind. How many times do we have to have this conversation? Of course
Right.
not.
I'm going to repost the link.
Okay, Spring is Coming by Copperband.
Yes.
Okay. It's coming. Meadows are about green spring nearing. Buds on trees growing into shoots. Winter creamy cold clouds are clearing. Trees are about to wear new suits. Daffodils parading their beauty. Robins making their nests seem happy. Their nests hidden in mud and moss. Bluebirds use tree holes with no doors. Lambs have joy in the field leaping. Bumblebees pleased. Their queen looks big. She finds her nest behind a brick. The scent of fresh cut grass is leading. Days grow longer and sun smiles more. People are happy walking on shore. And boom.
Well, that was a beautiful read, Bobby. And this is a lovely little poem. It paints a beautiful spring picture of robins making their nests seem happy. Their nests hidden in mud and moss. Bluebird used tree holes with no doors. And you can really picture this one. Lambs having joy in the fields leaping. Just a beautiful poem. What did you think, Lord?
I liked it a great deal. The form puzzled me a little bit, and I noticed that it's a one-line stanza. which come to find out is based on the form that a Russian poet named Petrarch actually used, or excuse me, Pushkin, Alexander Pushkin. I like the way it was set up. I like the sentiments. I thought the language was, joyful. It just made me feel good all over. Lovely piece.
Absolutely. Thank you, Lauren. And Lee, what did you think? Hello, Lou. Let me see if she dropped here.
Her words are precious. She doesn't just give them away.
She has dropped, and we have Pam to pick up. Hello, and welcome to the show, Pam.
Hi, Grace.
Hi, Pam.
Hello, everyone. Good to hear y'all.
Thank you, you too. Naomi, what did you think of the poem?
Well, I think she painted her, copper band. I don't know if that's a girl or a man or a girl, but I think there was a beautiful imagery here. Oh, my gracious. You know, it just painted this wonderful canvas of spring here that just and made it come to life, you know. With the, like you said, I think Gray, you know, the lambs leaping and the bumblebees, you know, buzzing around. And, you know, she even has the scent of the fresh cut grass in there. And, you know, the days that grow longer and the sun. And I love that. The sun smiles more instead of the, you know, just saying the sun shines more. The sun smiles more. People are happy and, you know, walk on shore. Yeah, it's true. You know, he makes it, you know, warm and fuzzy, you know, that all of this, the notion of summer, you know, and spring and summer coming. Just a wonderful, wonderful little write here.
Great comment. Thank you. And Bobby, what did you think?
Beautiful visual imagery, and I have to thank the writer for introducing me to something new called the Onegin stanza or Onegin sonnet. And I was looking it up, and it has a different form. It's similar to Shakespearean in that it has the quatrains and iambic pentameter, but it has the couplet at the end. But I'm going to have to look this up and do some playing with it. I love getting new formats. It's like getting a new outfit. it's like wearing new shoes. I really like this, though. I mean, like Naomi said, the sun smiles more instead of shines more. There's a lot of personification in this. The sun, the bumblebees, the robins, the daffodils parading their beauty. It's a really very lovely homage to spring.
Great comment. Thank you, Bobby. And Pam, did you get a chance to hear Bobby read?
Unfortunately, I did not, so I'll be happy to comment on the next one.
Okay. Louie, what are your thoughts?
Can you hear me, Gray?
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, I just thought this was, you know, like everybody said, it was just a beautiful poem. It was heart uplifting to the soul, where winter, you know, you shiver the whole time, and you finally get to breathe in spring. And I liked where he says trees are about to wear new suits. Just like we peel off all that heavy clothes, daffodils parading their beauty, robins making their nests seem happy. And, you know, it says, you know, that they had it hidden in the mud and moss where, you know, they'll be putting their next set of baby birds. And it's just a beautiful poem all the way around. Very descriptive.
Well said. Thank you. Okay, Pam, I'm going to repost the next poem, if you wouldn't mind, please.
I wouldn't mind at all. This
oh, before you read it, I'd like to welcome Frank to the show. Hello, Frank.
Hey, Frank.
Hi, Frank.
Hello there. I've been having, I was dropped before. I don't know if it's my connection or not, but the phone dropped me there. So bear with me tonight. I'll try to stay on as much as I can. As much as the phone can
be. You're going to have to speak louder, Frank, because I can barely hear you.
No, I'm saying is that I've been having issues with the phone. And if I'll try to stay on as long as I can, you know, permitted the connection permits it as well.
Okay.
I'm at full volume. I can hardly hear you.
Same.
I can't hardly hear you. You might need to call back, Frank. It's probably a bad connection.
All right. I'll go ahead and do that. I'll do that right now.
Thank you.
Okay. Pam, anytime you're ready. Thank you.
Okay. Mademoiselle Spring by Michael McDermott, and it goes like this. Let us give gratitude to Father Time for sending his beautiful daughter Spring around again to visit us with potent recreation and the delicate lightness she is bound to bring. So greet her, welcome her, show you your delight, for Mademoiselle Spring has come again to lift winter spirits with such warm light charms. All loving pairs will now reply, display games. Buds will blossom to thrill and shed enchantment in shared celebration of this lovely, vivid time. And when she spreads her protective wings around all fresh, newborn, guileless, living things, let us raise our voices and our hearts to sing of the glorious bounties of Mademoiselle Spring. End poem.
That was a beautiful read. Thank you. But, you know, the poem's fantastic. It's, you know, I love the personification of spring, starting with, let us give gratitude to Father Time for sending his beautiful daughter Spring. You know, just a wonderful poem full of enchantment and beauty. What did you think, Lauren?
Personally, I'm very pleased that Father Time is not some greedy old bastard who keeps Spring all to himself. Beautifully done. I, too, enjoyed the personification. She carried it off quite neatly, or he carried it off quite neatly, especially with phrases like, and when she spreads her protective wings around all fresh, newborn, guileless, living things. That's nicely done.
Well done. Well said. Thank you, Lauren. And Lydia, what are your thoughts?
You know, I just thought this was so beautiful. Mademoiselle Spring, you know, how he talks that Father Time is sending his beautiful daughter to open up the delicate light that she's going to bring. So spring and everything that comes with it. And what I liked about this is that for us to think, to sing with Mother, you know, with Mademoiselle Spring to, you know, to help this chorus of the birds and everything so that we're all singing. I enjoyed it very much.
Thank you, Lee. Great comment. Naomi, what are your thoughts?
I love the word Mademoiselle. You know, in Mademoiselle, it has a, like, a, you know, you say that to, a, like, a young, usually young woman, you know, you know, when you want to be polite and nice, and you know, it really represents something light and pretty and fresh, and you know, Mademoiselle, and so I just love that he put that word in there, Mademoiselle Spring, and you know, to lift winter spirits with such warm light charms. All loving pairs will now replay display games. Buds will blossom to thrill and shed enchantment. I just love so many lines throughout this. Just a beautiful right throughout.
Great comment. Thank you, Naomi. And Bobby, what are you thinking?
I enjoyed it. Again, the personification. It put me in mind of the myth of Persephone. Because, again, he's got Spring as a young woman. lifting winter, and when Persephone came back from Hades for her time on surface of planet, she brought with her spring. Everything started budding and blooming again. She spread her protective wings, all fresh, newborn, guileless, living things. It had the same flavor to me. Only it gave her a little bit of a different identity, which I thought was quite charming.
Well said. Thank you, Bobby. And Pam, what did you think?
Oh, this is absolutely delightful. Wonderful rhyme and flow, beautiful imagery. I, too, love the personification of spring as a young woman. And I particularly like all loving pairs will now play display games. Buds will blossom to thrill and shed enchantment. Wonderful lines and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Frank, what are your thoughts?
Oh, can you hear me now?
You're a little bit better, yeah.
Oh, well, I'll try to make it more deep in the voice of mine. I thought the poem was a fabulous poem. You know, it was beautiful. I like what was mentioned here before. I believe I only said the personification of spring here, of the word Mama said. And I thought it was just a beautiful idea. It just encompassed the poem well, and I really liked the way the adage there, the Father Time, you know, giving gratitude to Father Time there. Really, really very innovative there. But the poem was great.
Thank you, Frank. Appreciate the comment. Okay, so I've got the next poem up, Frank. And I'd like to get you to read, but we can hardly hear you. So I don't know if you want to read or not. Do you want to try?
I can try. I can try. You just tell me if you don't hear me. That's the thing. But I'll go ahead and try. I have no problem with that. This is called...
Okay.
I'll stick a little longer than I have to. It's called The Exorcism of Winter, and it goes like this. She smiled when she cried, the harlequin heart ripped by the very thing that used to make it beat. Spring passed by in a hearse, poisoned by the blood from her own eyes. It was all her fault. They say it was all her fault. She was tired of being a recipient of their accusations, exhausted with her fingers pointing straight at her, like stray bullets made from gunpowder and mallets. Perhaps she was wrong and they were right. Maybe everyone else was tired from listening. All these excuses she made just to rationalize her own mistake. She died that summer, her corpse buried in the backyard with its gurumela flowers and soft wither, killed by the fifth verse of a gunslinger's baritone serenade. But then autumn arrived and it suffocated her lungs with its ice coffee flavor. Liquor, breath, and pain, she started to leave, a falling, a same kind of crash course, to be able to find herself amidst poetry written by her own breathing. And she learned how to exercise winter by shooting yesterday's ghost while singing to the sun in the pool. Were you able to hear that?
Yeah, I heard it. That was a beautiful read, Frank.
I'm sorry, my tone was a little bit higher. I just want to make sure I can hear me.
Yeah. Thank you, Frank. But, you know, the poem is it's deep, it's melancholic, you know, it's kind of painful with its, she died that summer, her corpse buried in the backyard where the camellia flowers were starting to wither, killed by fifth verse of a gunslinger's baritone serenade. You know, that's a haunting image there. Yeah, just a powerful poem. And what did you think, Laurent?
Well, I think that something happened in winter. At first I thought it was a personification of one of the seasons, but it doesn't seem to be. It was a metaphorical death. She died that summer, her corpse buried in the backyard with a gumama, gumamela flowers were starting to wither, killed by the fifth verse of the gunslinger's baritone serenade. It sounds to me like the song hearkens to a love that she may have lost. And to find her resuscitated by autumn. and I thought was nicely done. In fact, that entire stanza is beautifully done, and the ending is magnificent. And she learned how to exercise winter by shooting yesterday's ghost while singing to the sun. Such a beautiful image. It's a powerful piece. Really well done.
Great comment. Thank you. And Louis, what did you think?
You know, it was a wonderful read by Frank. And this is an amazing, powerful poem, you know, that when I was listening to him read, you know, you can destroy somebody with your words. You don't always have to beat them or slap their face. Sometimes your words cut, like she says here, like bullets. She said, you know, it says that she smiled when she cried, her harlequin heart ripped by the very thing that used to make it beat. You can destroy somebody, you know, by maybe their behavior. Maybe they like to sing, maybe they like to dance, maybe they like to, whatever it was, an artist, whatever it was that her harlequin heart desired, they ripped it to shreds with bullets. And then, you know, she says that they, you know, as always, when you are trying to make somebody feel worthless, you blame them for everything. And it was all her fault. They say it was all her heart, you know, and then sometimes you can go into a depressive state, which I don't know exactly what happened here, but there comes a time after the hard winter, the spring, and the summer heat that we can revive ourselves in fall. I love autumn. And this is where she found that she learned to exercise winter and exercise those ghosts and everything that was following her. And she awakened and she sung to the sun. She found her way, her path. At least that's what it meant to me.
Great comment, Lee. Thank you. And Naomi, what are your thoughts?
I see this as a, you know, somebody like you said, somebody that's really hurt, and you know, like she died like inside, but then you know that is so beautiful, that line there. But then autumn arrived and resuscitated her lungs with its ice coffee flavored liquor breath. And so she started to believe that falling was some kind of crash course to be able to find herself amidst poetry written by her own bruises. So she wrote all her bruises, all her hurt into her poetry, and that's what made her come back to the sun, you know, at the end. Well, that's what I got out of it. Just an amazing right here. Wow, you know, just so powerful and poignant, and you know, it's just amazing.
Absolutely. Thank you, Naomi. And Bobby, what are your thoughts?
Very compelling piece. It just drives you headlong through the whole work. It's visceral. It's raw. Also, I had difficulty discerning whether it was a personification or an actual death or metaphoric death. And the metaphor. And it was stunning. This is an exquisite piece. Autumn arrived and resuscitated her lungs. So she started to believe that falling was some kind of crash course to be able to find herself amid poetry written by her own bruises. My God, that is just a magnificent piece of writing, and I've already put it, I've recommended it for an FPP.
Great comment. Thank you, Bobby. And Pam.
Yeah, this is just absolutely brilliant, powerful and emotive, wonderful imagery and metaphors. I like how it's about somebody who refuses to put up with pointed fingers and, you know, gossips and people who will judge people by their past, and rather learns to love and embrace themselves and walk away from their past and walk away from the cruel negativity towards the light of the sun. So beautifully written and very well done.
Great comment. Thank you, Pam. And Frank.
Well, I thought this was a very powerful poem, you know, just starting with the title there, The Exorcism of Winter. You know, I almost felt that this poem was like a rebirth and yet at the same time, a death. You know, I agree with Bobby. The metaphor was brilliant. This poem was spectacular in that regard. But what I enjoyed about this poem was the affirmation there of really understanding what it takes in the whole notion of experience of life to go through its ups and downs and fall and get back on your feet. That's what I found very impressive about this poem. But also, there's one other thing. This poem was written 9 years ago, and that is remarkable, remarkable.
Great comment. Thank you, Frank. Okay, everybody, I have the next poem up. It's by Blues Man, and it's called Clash of the Titans. Leave it to old Mother Nature to be the father of cryogenics, preset on her perennial timer. She rudely clutch starts spring cold before summer warms her engines. Earth shudders from the shock wave as the blocked ice dam is shattered, freeing mountain spring headwaters to feed the fertile bottom land farms plowed in the valleys down below. Warm thermals teasingly descend to compress winter's desperate gasp in the death throes of spring's wrath. This most glorious of all battles is an eternal clash of the titans, where they only live for the rematch that must be fought every year. End poem. And I thought that was a wonderful take on Clash of the Titans and nature combined. I thought it was just well written. It was a powerful piece in its stance. The most glorious of all battles is an eternal clash of the titans, where they only live for the rematch that must be fought every year. Yeah, beautiful poem. What did you think, Lauren?
Nicely put, by the way, and nicely read. I get the impression that Bluesman describing nature as a crusty old dame who, when ready, just starts, and everybody else better be right there behind her. She rudely clutch starts spring cold before summer warms her engines, and using that one metaphor, and then allowing the shockwave from that to release spring, you know, the ice dam being shattered, warm thermals, and then to make it that glorious battle of the Titans really livens up the poem. I liked it a great deal.
Great comment. Thank you. And Louie, what did you think?
You know, you did a really great job in reading this, and I always enjoy his poetry. I got a big kick out of when I heard you reading. She rudely clutches, starts spring's cold before summer warms her engine. And it just kind of, I started laughing because, you know, that's how I am before I have my cup of coffee in the morning. And so I don't know, that just tickled me, you know. And then, you know, the next line, earth shudders from the shock wave as the blocked ice dam is shattered, you know. And it's just, you know, the whole thing of how and it is true, the Titans, each season sets its own personality and foot in the mark on the calendars. I know some of us have less of some seasons and more in others, but I just thought this was a delightful poem by Bluesman. I like the battle.
Thank you. Thank you, Liu. And Naomi, what did you think?
Oh, yeah, I agree. Like, I love how he painted Mother Nature, you know, as, you know, as this, but he says old Mother Nature, but really he paints her paints her as like an old warrior, you know, an old, like a wise warrior, you know, that's ready for battle. And, you know, just right down, like Laurent said, to that last stanza, that's really amazing all throughout. This is just a wonderful, wonderful little write.
Thank you, Naomi. And Pam, what are your thoughts?
I thought this is wonderful. I really like how Naomi described how she describes Mother Nature as like a warrior. And I have to agree with Lou that this is a delightful poem. I especially myself found humor in the first lines where he says, "Leave it to Mother Nature to be the father of cryogenics." I mean, because to me right there, he's saying that Mother Nature wears the pants in the household. And and that just amuses me. And I really like the imagery in the third stanza. And I thought this was very well done.
Thank you, Ken. Bobby, what are your thoughts?
I have a similar take on the first stanza. I saw that play on words. Leave it to old Mother Nature to be the father of cryogenics. I thought that was a clever turn of phrase, and I like the way he compares spring to or Mother Nature to a vintage internal combustion engine. Reminds me of when I was growing up and my mother would have to go out, start the car in the driveway in the wintertime, and yet it warmed, the engine warmed up before she was going to go anywhere. And like Lou, you, I tend to start my mornings the same way, with letting my engine idle until I finally get it warmed up and going. This is a really wonderfully expressive piece, great visual imagery, a great word painting here.
Well said. Thank you, Bobby. And Frank, what did you think?
Yes, I agree with what I think it was Naomi who said, that it was a personification of a born warrior. I almost felt this in his poem. This is what I felt, you know, I felt the empowerment of the speech here, the way he encompassed in the metaphors was a beautiful notion there. I like the fact that the silence. But I like the fact that he also made reference to Mother Nature. So this was a beautiful poem.
Great comment. Thank you, Frank. Okay, Laurent, I've got your piece up, if you wouldn't mind, please.
All right. This is not about spring as a sweet thing, but it's about a different kind of spring being experienced by people across the sea right now. And it's called Last Moments, Child with Hope, dreams that rise above the pitch of her upraised palm. She is swallowed by a Jerusalem night. Sound of guns is near, yet far away, bleeding across both Mediterranean and Black Seas. Sound of thunder is the sound of God we emulate with our guns. We rip apart, sundering to show how like the gods we are, capsizing our humanity at will, bleeding the earth of innocence, gilding the hammer hand with a greased palm. We incubate in an oven of hatred and manipulation, a constant consequence of nature defiled, shrunken, castrated, bent under by a serpent's tongue, to the will of antiseptic evil. He spreads flesh into the road, churning bodies with treads of war, bloody tracks disappearing over ancient horizons whose suns set eons ago and whose dawns are still the same today. Earth is dressed in the sepulchral rags, black and flapping in cold winds, like the ravens that circle the dead, whose wide, staring eyes are frozen, fixed in place by the heat and ice of last moments. End poem.
Wow, that was a powerful read, Laurent, and a powerful poem as well. You know, you speak to the child that dreams rise above the pitch of her upraised hand, palm. She is swallowed by a Jerusalem night. The sound of guns is near yet far away, bleeding across both Mediterranean and Black Seas. Sound of thunder is the sound of God we emulate with our guns. You know, how true is that? Just a haunting poem, Laurent. Beautifully read, I mean, and written. You know, we incubate in an oven of hatred and manipulation. You know, this is too true, and I thought it was just a fantastic statement on society. A beautiful write, excellent read. Lee, what did you think? You bet.
What did you say?
Lee.
Did you say me? Yeah.
Yes.
Can you hear me, Gray? Okay.
Yeah.
You know, Laurent, this just filled my eyes with tears. This is written so well that you could just walk into the words and see what is happening, and it could paint pictures in our minds. You know, it just, you know, I think of these kids, how, you know, they're not running away from paying tag or playing ball. They're running away from bullets. They, you know, I was watching a documentary how they listen to the different sounds of rockets, and they know when to go run and hide because they're outside playing amongst the rubble of the buildings and apartment complexes that have already been bombed ahead of them, and they're just playing in the rubble. And, you know, and it's amazing to me how when people get weapons, they think that they can become tyrants and rule with tyranny by forcing people to bend their way. But, you know, it's either you do it my way or I'm just going to gun you down and just kill you. This was just fantastic. You just showed humanity at its worst. Excellent read, Laurent.
Thank you,
Leah. And Naomi, what are you thinking?
Oh, yeah, this was just chilling. Like, it just gave me chills. You know, it's such an amazing painting of, you know, of all the monstrosity of war. You incubate in an oven of hatred and manipulation. My gracious, that's so such a, you know, a raw picture there. You know, it's just, you know, you imagine yourself in inside of an oven there, and then the nature defiled, shrunken, castrated, bent under by a serpent's tongue to the will of antiseptic evil. Oh, my gracious, you know, that's such a powerful writing. And you know, the flesh spread on the road, stripping bodies, bloody tracks. Oh, my gracious, you know, it just gave me chills. This is so, so well written, Laurent, you know. Everybody should read this poem, I think. it's just amazing.
Thank you, Naomi.
Well said. Thank you, Naomi. And Pam, what did you think?
Oh, I thought this was just absolutely powerful. I particularly like that second stanza, and then the stanza that starts with, we incubate in an oven of hatred and manipulation, a constant consequence of nature defiled, shrunken. It's just such a horrid and sad thing, the way we people allow hate and to just fester. And I really thought this was very emotive and showed the ugliness of war and hate and its effects upon the innocent lives of children. So beautifully written and very well done.
Thank you, Pam.
And Bobby, what did you think?
This is a very potent piece. It brings forth the perpetual victim of all such naked aggression to the child. Senseless, caught up in the mechanism of war, chewed up by the cogs of war, in the naked aggression of war, and just concerned with survival. The way you have crafted this piece is just so raw, brutally.
Thank you.
Sure. Flapping and the ravens that circle the dead, wide-eyed staring or frozen, fixed in place by the heat and ice of last moments. It is really a bone-chilling piece, and all the more chilling because of its true reality.
Thank you, Bob.
Great comment, Bobby. Thank you. And Pam, what did you think?
Oh, I already commented.
Oh, I'm sorry. Frank, what did you think?
This was a very powerful poem. You know, I can recall a child from Western Sahara. You know, that they've had a conflict there with Morocco for years. I can remember just hearing the stories, you know, what it was, you know, and this image here looks like one of these unfortunate victims of that war there. You know, they come so innocent over there, it's just a padded life. But, you know, they rise up with hope, you know, and it's all seen, even though you look at the photo, you hear what goes on and with the images, and you have to believe hope that there is hope for these children, you know, of war. And there is. And that's not for everyone, but for most of these kids, they at least have something to grasp onto. Because sometimes they can never go back to their homeland. And that's a terrible thing. You know, I've always said that it's easy for these, you know, rogue dictators to send their own, send others, you know, other children to war, but they don't send their own. So this poem really brought a lot of perspective for me. I thought it was beautifully touching. To the forefront, the holy image and the capacity of war and the consequences as well.
Thank you, Frank.
Thank you, Frank. Okay, Lou, you have the next poem up, and it's by Incubus 2, if you wouldn't mind, please. Hello, do you?
Great. You have two poems up. Which one do I read first?
Incubus.
Incubus. Okay. I would be very happy to read. No More Lonely Nights by Incubus 2. My love for you blossoms, oh, so true. It shames the very rose as every day you're away. My need for you still grows. The thorns pierce deep, my lonely sleep. Your scent haunts all my nights. My body aches whilst I'm awake, and you're far from my sight. She loves me hot, she loves me not. The petals fall from grace as empty chair begs for you there to fill this empty space. Walking the halls of naked walls where once your picture hung, the faded space cannot replace the joy your image brung. Now packed and stored on bare floorboards, the windows locked up tight, close up the door, I'll stay no more nor spend another night. For without you, I cannot do another day alone. Too empty, dear, without you near, the house is not a home. End poem. Wow.
A beautiful read. And, you know, this is a heart-wrenching poem. It pulls out the sadness and the loneliness of losing somebody. And the emptiness that grows there. It's a very sad poem, pain-filled and dark. Beautiful. What did you think about it?
I thought the metaphors throughout this were excellent. The rhythm of the writing is, to me, really captivating. And if I had to pick a stanza, it would be Walking the Halls of Naked Walls, where once your picture hung, the faded space cannot replace the joy your image brung. And it was so movingly read by Lu Yu, I thought choked a little bit on that last couple of raw lines, because it certainly brought a swelling into my throat as well. Beautifully done.
What a comment. Thank you, Laurent. And Naomi, what did you think?
Oh, yeah, this is just awesome, awesome writing here. You know, it's such emotion. You know, poetry that can bring you such emotion like that, you know, like raw emotion, you know, it is terrific writing in my book, you know. I just love that stanza that, you know, Laurent just recited me also, you know, that was one of my favorites there. You know, the thought of the image, you know, now packed and stored on bare floorboards, windows locked up tight, close up the door, I'll stay no more, spend another night. And then that last line, two empty beers, without near, this house is not a home. You know, it just strikes you right in the heart. You know, this is such a wonderfully written piece, you know, deep sadness and longing and hurt and loss for a loved one, you know. So it's so well expressed throughout this poem.
Thank you, Naomi. And Pam, what did you think?
Oh, my goodness. This is absolutely beautiful. It just really strikes a chord with the heart of the idea of such wonderful love given, and then at the very end, the realization that it was taken away, and that, as the last line says, to empty dear without you near, this house is not a home. Just wonderful emotional lines and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. And Bobby, what did you think?
By the technical aspects of the poem. The rhyming scheme, you will see quite a bit from the lyricist W.S. Gilbert of Gilbert and Sullivan fame. You will see that same rhyming pattern where two words in the first line will rhyme, and then the third, you know, rhymes with the last. It is not an easily executed rhyming pattern, and the fact that he's able to construct a very melancholy, mournful piece with that that rhyming pattern that actually lends itself more to levity is quite impressive.
Great comment. Thank you, Bobby. And Frank, what did you think?
Yeah, excuse me. This poem really reflected all on that line, the title, No More Lonely Night. You know, there's a melancholy. It just speaks. Just the notion of, you know, lingering, just the notion of longing for someone who perhaps is not there. And when that happens, it can be very, very painful, particularly when you make memories. I remember myself as well, leaving a place there and a lost one as well, a loved one. And I can understand what it feels like, you know, you're there with a child. This is just a part of the poem. It has, you know, real, raw, you know, emotions to be attached to them.
Well said. Thank you, Frank. Okay, Naomi, I've got your poem up, if you wouldn't mind, please.
I'm in the wrong show. I thought this was the show about the smile. So I wrote a poem really fast about a smile. Yeah, a brevity, really. I'm not used to writing brevity, so go with me. This is called Just Because. I still remember the feeling of pure beauty in a smile for the first time. After seeing the plotting smile in your dark eyes, so mischievously magnetic, that I lunged forward to steal one kiss. But one kiss became never enough with you. And our goodbyes became always so hard, because all our hellos seemed still so fresh. And that beauty, that feeling of pure beauty, in a smile for the first time, that feeling was mine. Now I feel it every day because you always make me smile just because. Oh. And poem.
Beautiful read and a touching poem, you know, about being deeply in love with somebody that to bring you to smile. After seeing the plotting smile in your dark eyes, so mischievously magnetic, that I lunged forward to steal one kiss. But one kiss became never enough with you. And then, you know, when you want to talk about goodbyes and hellos, just a beautiful poem, Naomi. What did you think, Laurent?
Well, you kind of melted my heart with this one. I still remember the feeling of pure beauty and a smile for the first time after seeing plotting smile in your dark eyes, so mischievously magnetic that I lunged forward to steal one kiss. And you know, and it's that kiss, that expression of love, so poignantly stated, so simply and elegantly realized. Really a nice piece. Thank you, dear.
Thank you, Laura.
And Lee, what did you think? Thank you, Laura.
Can you hear me, Gray?
Yes, we can.
You know, Naomi, I thought you did a beautiful brevity here. You know, I could literally see everything that's happening here, and I could feel it. And I love poetry that I can feel the emotions from the poet. And, you know, especially there where you were talking about, you know, that look that they have in their eyes that is so magnetic, it's so magical that you constantly being pulled in. And then once you get to taste their lips with those magnetic eyes, you just want to keep on tasting. This was lovely as it was beautiful, and I could feel everything. Thank you, Naomi.
No, thank you, Lee.
Thank you, Lee. And Pam, what did you think?
Oh, this is a beautiful, heartfelt write. I love how it's so tender and romantic and takes a look at the looking back at that time when somebody first smiled at you and you knew there was something special. And that the fact that they still make you smile is something even more special. So beautifully written and well done.
Great comment. Thank you, Pam. And Bobby, what did you think?
I thought this was a delicately romantic piece, so beautiful. It's like holding a rose blossom in your hand. You don't want to shut your hand for fear of damaging the blossom. It is just so well expressed, the euphoria, the pure joy that one feels. When being in love, it's almost like you would burst. Your body can't contain the happiness that you're feeling. And I think your piece conveys that with such elegance that you can, in the reading, feel it.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you, Bobby. And what did you think?
Yes.
Sorry, Frank.
I can't hear him. You have to talk louder, Frank.
Okay, can you hear me now? Can you hear
yes,
me?
Yes, much better.
Yes.
All right. Sorry. I'll be speaking. It's beyond just the eyes of a woman, I've always found that the smile is the most beautiful thing as well. I'd like to give a fantastic job.
Thank you, Frank. Okay, Pam, I've got your poem up, if you wouldn't mind, please.
All right. This is Dinner at Five, and it goes like this. You look up from your Emily Dickinson poetry with doe eyes, realizing the world is ugly. You squirmed. Nothing made sense. Not love, not rhyme, not the purr of the resting cat. The world had changed. Why? Perhaps for no reason, then change is inevitable to a world that pushes, regretting the swing's arch. The cat is pacing. It's dinner time. It doesn't give a rat's hind quarter about the world. Let it be ugly. Let it be beautiful. Let it be whatever your prose embalmed mind perceives it to be. But always serve a cat's dinner at five sharp. And poem.
Beautiful. And in your author's note, you say, beauty is nothing. Beauty won't stay because of people like you. You know it is for something else. That was a beautiful poem, Pam. You know, it's deeply introspective and powerful in its presentation. I really like the personification of the cat and it's dinner time. It's a beautiful rate, Pam.
Thank you. And that was written to a Charles Bukowski quote. Just that's what that is in the end. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, you bet. Lauren, what did you think?
Well, I can certainly appreciate the sentiments from the point of view of Bukowski. He would have probably said the same thing, although perhaps not quite as politely. Perhaps for no reason, and change is inevitable to a world that pushes, regretting the swing's arc. The cat is pacing. It's dinner time. Well, that's a wonderful metaphor for certain things that always occur, reoccur. And the cat's dinner is not the least of them. We all have such moments in our lives, like our dinner, for instance. A beautifully done piece with a lot of depth to it, Pam. A lot of depth.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, one of the contest rules was no swearing, no adult. So it's not my usual Bukowski right.
Thank you, Pam. I mean, and thank you, Lou. I mean, yeah, thank you, Lauren. Lou, what did you think?
Can you hear me, Gray? I just want to make sure I'm not muted.
Yeah.
You know, what I loved about this poem is Pam's sarcasm. Pam's got the best sarcasm where she can take a quote and twist it on its head in another direction. You know, it's true. Beauty can be destroyed by somebody else because what everybody thinks is beautiful is not what the other person that thinks is beautiful. And, you know, what I loved about this is how, you know, you took that person reading that book, squirm, realizing that epiphany that, yeah, you know, I guess it's right. And then, you know, to see what's going around her, you know, because the world has changed. It has vastly changed. And you know, and then you talk about this cat here that, you know, it doesn't matter how much the world has changed. The cat does not change with their attitude. They want to be fed when they want to be fed and screw the world and its beauty. Enjoyable.
Thank you, Lou.
Absolutely. Thank you, Lou. And Naomi, what did you think?
Oh, I just love this. You know, and it's true. It has such a beautiful and a clever detail in its wording. Like, just take that first stanza. You look up from your Emily Dickinson poetry with doe eyes, realizing the world is ugly. You know, you're stuck in that beautiful Emily Dickinson poetry, all blue eyes, and then you look up and, oh, my gracious, oh, reality strikes, you know? And, you know, you just described that so wonderfully there, Pam. And I just love, you know, perhaps for no reason, the change is inevitable to a world that pushes regretting the swing's arch. I just love that wording there. And then bringing the cat in at the end was just so uniquely clever. Oh, my gracious, this whole night is so well put together, you know. It's such a wonderful, amazing, witty intelligence right here, Pam.
Thank you, Naomi.
Great comment, Naomi. Thank you. And Bobby, what did you think?
Let it be whatever your prose embalmed mind perceives it to be. What wonderful lines. I really enjoyed it. It is so rife with sarcasm and cynicism. And I like, I saw the cat as a metaphor for life, because regardless of the reader's agenda, life pushes and presses on in its own time with its own agenda. Like the cat, the cat, the pacing at the dinner time, the cat wants what the cat wants, and regardless of what is happening. Life is sort of the same way. It's always the same. What plans are what we make when life, you know, life intrudes when we're making plans. And it feels the same way with this. That perhaps for no reason, then change is inevitable to a world that pushes regretting the swing's arch. Well, it's very clever, very edgy. I really liked it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bobby. And Frank, what did you think?
Yes, I'll be brief. I thought it was a very witty poem, very creative, and a satire was actually here.
Thank you, Frank.
Thank you, Frank. Appreciate it. Okay, Bobby, you're up next, please.
Oh, okay. This was written Dentry, the prompt. Was the artwork, the image you see at the top. We were to write something inspired by that. And after deliberating quite some time, all of a sudden I was hit right between the running lights with the piece that I came up with. And it's called Rainbow Iconoclast. I'm the crazy one, the misfit, the rebel, the troublemaker. I'm the square peg in the round hole. I see things differently, antithetically, divergently. I despise rules, customs, traditions, established ways. I have no respect for the status quo. I'm the pain in the arse who shakes things up. You can disagree with me and deride me. You can mock me. You can quote me. You can glorify me, vilify me, bless me, berate me. You can call me anything but God's child, children, nature's child. The only thing you cannot do is ignore me. You can't ignore me because I change things. I push humanity forward out of its comfort zone. And while some may see me as crazy, others see genius. And they'll be shocked no matter what I do. Regardless, they'll never understand me. Perhaps it is because those of us who are crazy enough to think that we can change the world are, in fact, the ones who do. But it means traveling the road not taken, loving resistance, because resistance is often creative, and I feed on creativity. I believe in what I am, and I am confident in my convictions. I see clearly options that other people can't or won't see, and I delight in ensuring that the subversive does not become just another conventional, commonplace, colorless lifestyle. And you've got to love it, and yourself, because if you love yourself, others will too. Although that's not really the point. While there are will be those who will want to love you, there will be those who will beg to worship you. And that's okay too, because mind fornication can be vastly entertaining. So first rule, if they give you lined paper, the other way. End poem.
I loved it, Bobby. You know, let your rainbow shine. And I thought it was beautifully executed in this poem.
Thank you.
You know, you did a wonderful write and a fantastic read. You can just agree with me and just deride me. You can mock me, you can quote me, you can glorify me, vilify me, bless me, berate me. You can tell me everything, but you can call me everything but nature's child. The only thing you cannot do is ignore me. You can't ignore me because I change things. You know, I'm a force, and believe it. Just a beautiful poem, Bobby. Lauren, what did you think?
Well, as usual, we have a great piece from Bobby. I like all the stanzas, especially one that you just read. But the next one, I push humanity forward out of its comfort zone. And while some may see me as crazy, others see genius, and they'll be shocked no matter what I do. Regardless, they'll never understand me. Perhaps it's because of those who are crazy enough to think we can change the world are in fact the ones who do. You know, the contrariness of self-expression in a rigid, stratified society of norms is amusingly and thoughtfully postulated in this skillful and insightful poem. Nice job.
Thank you,
great
sir.
Great comment. Thank you, Lauren. And Lee, what did you think?
Can you hear me, Greg?
Yes.
Bobby, I just thought this was a powerful read. I can see your personality in this, weaved in and around all over the place. To me, I've always been raised, if you can't go through the mountain, you go over it, under it, around it, left, right. It's just something that, you know, that I was raised on. And, you know, usually under pressure is where the creative juices start feeding on the different thoughts and how we can work this out. You know, and this is what I like about this poem is there's a difference between bossy and difference between being assertive. And what I like so much about this is that not only do you have this belief, but you bring others with you that they can overcome. Just keep going. The harder the road, the better the rewards. Excellent poem, excellent read, excellent write. I love this.
Thank you, Lisa. And Naomi, what did you think?
You want to know a secret? When I was a teenager, I looked like that. I had blue and orange hair, and my father went crazy.
That looks familiar.
And I wanted this, like, bright orange, like, lacy dress, like this crazy dress for my graduation ball. And my father took me to the store, and he bought me this other dress. He made me change, and he made me put on this other dress. And he said, no, 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 you're going in this dress. We're going to be present. And, so I relate to this poem a lot.
Aww.
You know, it really hit a note with me. You know, I was always a rebel when I was a teenager. And, you know, even into university, I had manifestations and I had strikes on in the school and, you know, waving my... yeah. Well, they wanted to put out a professor once, and, you know, I went on a riot, you know, in Shirley University, and, you know, I had petitions signed up, and then and my last year at university, they had this stupid law. Anyway, I was against the law at the university, so anyway, I got that law changed, because it was a really stupid old law, you know. Anyway. So, yeah, so I relate to this poem a lot. I think it was wonderful, wonderfully colorful, and just amazingly well written. And I just love that last line that you put in there, Bobby. So first rule, if they give you lined paper, write the other way. I thought that was such a clever, clever line. I just love this old writing.
Thank you very much. I cannot take credit for that. I actually took my inspiration not only from the picture, but there's a quote in the author's note, if they give you ruled paper, write the other way, and that's Juan Ramon Ramirez. And the people who are crazy enough to think they can change the world are the ones who do, and that's Robert Siltanen. That was where I drew a lot of my inspiration.
That's beautiful, buddy. Frank, what did you think?
Well, first of all, I want to thank you for throwing in the quote there by one that I want to name it, that he's forgotten Spanish poet to some degree nowadays. But this poem as well, what I thought about the poem was that it's very empowering. I agree. I believe what you said. It does personify you. It doesn't bother you. And when I think of the cycle, you never shy away. You always bring your thoughts to the forefront. Share your emotions. Although at times you use such eloquent language, you know, as a metaphor, you always bring in these innuendos of signs that make you think. So I'll leave it at that.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
And I'm sorry, Cam, did you get to comment on that?
I did not, and I thought this was absolutely delightful. I love the bold confidence in this. The way it flowed was really nice, and I really like, Bobby, how you not only embrace your attributes, you fully embrace them, you fully love them and accept them, and know that it's a gift to be a unique person and to walk and to create.
Yes, it is.
So very well done.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, I've got Frank's right up, and he has a SoundCloud, so I will play that.
We'll post it again just in case he missed it.
Okay, here we go.
Mi amor, upon the beauty of this magical night, we dance under the moonlight gleam, beneath the celestials of the alabaster stars, just you and I, my wild dove. Our sable shadows guide us with each step, as we glide across the vast universe. With the gentle winds and the speed of light, we become afterwards a streaking comet. Our suns ignite the blazing fire within us, and our atoms unite into a particle of love as we radiate through the center of the galaxies, a bright glow of our heat intensifying. The sound of a symphony of violins resonate throughout the cosmos as we then escape into our soothing whispers, traveling swiftly beyond the edge of infinity. Two steaming lovers embraced in a ball of fire blaze. Music makes our memories always dancing. We take flight with our kisses upon the taste of our full lips. K. carrying us through the exotic night. I'm forever faithful to you. And we dance with the meridian moon as we soar together in our erotic flight unto the secret dimensions of lovers. You are my universe, my sacred space, where I am lost in its ripples of time. Tú eres mi universo, mi espacio sagrado, donde estoy perdido en sus ondas de tiempo. Mi amor, mi flor.
Beautiful read, Frank, and such a touching poem. You know, it's ethereal, it's engaging and endearing. It really speaks to this exotic, ethereal love that you have with this person. And, you know, our sable shadows guide us with each step as we glide across the vast universe. With the gentle winds and speed of light, we become afterwards a streaking comet. How beautiful is that? You know, when two, I believe in this other dimension where lovers exist, and I thought it was just a beautiful poem, excellent read as well. Lauren, what did you think? You bet.
I am forever faithful to you, and we dance on the meridian moon as we soar together on our erotic flight unto the secret dimensions of lovers. The sensuality in this piece is palpable. A lyrical expression of the physical and the emotional. It's a poem of the heart and of the mind. Well done.
Thank you very much, Ben.
Great comment, Lauren. Thank you. And Louis, what did you think? Hello, Louis. Oh, hold on. Pam, can you do me a favor and pick Lou up? Oh, here we go. I got it.
Thank you. Thank you very much. You know, this was one of the most beautiful love poems that I've seen you write and read, because you just didn't just take this in the form of physicality. You also took it to a spiritual realm where somebody can make you feel so lost that you're traveling the stars with them. And then that music just, you know, just beautifully, the violinist just carried you away. I really loved this stanza where you said, our souls unite, the blazing fire within us, and as our atoms unite in a particle of love, as we radiate through the center of galaxies, a bright glow of heat intensifying. And, you know, I just thought that was just beautifully penned as it was written, because it truly does feel like that. Somebody can make you, a relationship can transcend. And then I liked where you said, tú eres mi universo, mi espacio sagrado. You know, that you are my universe, my sacred place. And that is how it always should be. Beautiful, beautiful, Frank. I enjoyed it very much.
Gracias.
And then, Anna.
Thank you, Lily. Sorry. Naomi, what did you think?
Oh, yeah, I think this. I agree. I was totally, transported to another place,
mm-hmm.
another dimension with this, right? It's just it's beyond romantic. It's just, under your skin romantic. It's weaved into your body. The sound, I just love the sound of a symphony of violins resonates from the cosmos as we then escape in such soothing whispers. Wow, that's escaping into our soothing whispers, like the soothing whispers of each other's, of each other's bodies, of each other's auras, of, you know, that it's just so cleverly all throughout this piece. Frank, I just loved it.
Thank you, Naomi. Appreciate that. And Pam, what did you think?
Oh, this is just absolutely beautiful, wonderful imagery and language throughout. I have to agree with Lou that it has a beautiful sense of spiritual connection between the two lovers. And I like how it not only touches on love, but on the idea of the universe itself and the idea of how music makes our memories and the closeness felt within that. And beautifully written and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Okay, I've got the next poem up. It's by S. Sharp, and it's called In Search Of, and I have a SoundCloud for that.
In Search Of. I impale myself upon the trident of Poseidon, submerging myself in a search for truth. Will someday I meet Milton's muse in purgatory or fields beyond, or find answers in scrolls left in scribes' caves along the shores of the Dead Sea? If I dive deeper, will I find Atlantis? Can they tell me of that I seek? Might Zeus strike me down with a lightning bolt in a flash, delivering me to the underworld's fiery darkness, Hades' oversight beneath the earth? Would Noah tell me it's all a farce? A flood of absurdity takes his ark out to sea. No pairs, no partners, no purpose. We are just individuals. We will all die alone. Death is an end. Was Pompeii a retribution for sins? Is life amongst the shadows of Mount Vesuvius, where we will all be buried in the ash of human existence? If I climb Mount Sinai, outside the cave, will I find a burning bush of my own? Will God speak to me too? Or can I ride the broad shoulders of Atlas? Will he hold me up? Show me the heavens at the western edge of Gaia, so I can see beyond the horizons of today. Could the Rosetta Stone help me understand where we come from, translate the origins of our existence? Maybe I'll search the tomes of the Library of Ashurbanipal, history hardened by fire, where ancient tablets reveal history, cuneiform writings from Mesopotamia, meaning held in stories of our past, the Gilgamesh tablet, or our flood stories awash in truth. If I too split the Red Sea, would I divide fact from fiction? Would knowledge lead me from the slavery of existence, this realm to another? Maybe I can enter the golden tomb of King Tut in search of the treasure, knowledge. However, will I suffer the curse of the Pharaoh, find myself entombed in the pyramids forever? What if I dig at Machu Picchu? Will I discover secrets of the stars, the workings of the universe, clocks and calendars, ancient aliens, chariots of the gods? Can I descend the stairs at Chichen Itza, a serpent of the gods, joining the processes of the earth at the equinox, heaven and the stars? I am the head of the snake, Kukulkan. Will I find lost relatives at Old Dubai Gorge in Tanzania? Will they speak to me of times since past? Would they argue about the history of man? Explain to me, I am their lineage. Tell me of the grand plan. Or must I wait for the redemption? Follow the Madaba map to where all is revealed, the Holy Land. Revelations, deeds judged at the end, where time is split, as am I, past, present, and future.
Well, that was a powerful read and a powerful poem on the subject of God and being God. You know, it really is deep and powerful in its presentation. And this flow is fantastic. You know, it didn't choke up once. But, you know, I thought it was a fantastic poem. What did you think, Lauren? Hello, Lauren? Oh, he's gone. Louis, what did you think?
Can you hear me, Gray?
Yes.
Well, what I thought about this poem was deeply powerful. This is something that makes you think. You know, he goes through all these different types of civil, you know, I don't know exactly what he was writing, so this is just my opinion. You know, we go through time, we go through civilizations, umpires, countries, rulers, and each has their own culture where they studied sciences and studied mythology and studied all types of things. And, you know, what is the answer? Because they rise and fall, rise and fall, rise and fall. You know, all of this is now part of our history. And where is it that we fit in between here? Excellent, excellent read. I love that recording and the poem.
Great comment. Thank you. And Naomi, what did you think?
Yeah, well, wow, eh? What a recording.
Yeah.
Yeah, his voice in this, it was just, you know, full of emotion, and it just came out so powerful and so clear there in his intent. I am Paul myself on the trident of Poseidon, submerging myself in a search for truth. And as, you know, and he goes through a lot of what is in the Bible, really, and also he goes through mythical Greek, you know, with Zeus and with the Greek god there, and with Atlantis there, and then he goes into the Bible again with Noah, and you know, Pompeii, Mount Si, where you know, the burning of the bush, and you know, where the Ten Commandments, I guess, came from there, Moses, and you know, and then he to end with the book of Revelations, you know, where does he have to wait for that book of Revelations to understand, you know, all that he is, like he says, as am I, past, present, and future. I have to read this a couple of times over and over again to get, you know, the full deepness of this poem, because, you know, there's a lot of layers and there's a lot in this. But, you know, I can't wait for the other insight on this poem. But just amazing right here. Wow. So powerful.
Thank you, Naomi. And Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, this is just powerful, stunning imagery and metaphors. I like how he delved into the different religions, the different mythologies. And I like how the overall message is that searching for answers, and also that was just a really strong read. It felt like he was reading to a stadium. I think honestly, if I was in a church service that he was leading, I might actually stay awake. That's the voice.
That is funny.
Yeah, but no, I really like how, you know, in the end, it's all about the journey, not about getting to the end of the journey, but what you expose yourself to along the way, what you're willing to think about and what you're willing to learn from. So beautifully written and very well done.
Absolutely. Thank you, Pam. Okay, I've got the next poll. Next poem up, and this is by Daniel Deschino, and it's called Youth. What a catalyst to catapult the cathedral of life is sunlight. Through the stained glass windows of our eyes, an energy transformation to the wind streams of the world, guidance for the youthful seeds of life, a time of freedom to look back on, a time of invincible hope, floating with discovery, to land where the air may take. Oh, the sun, watchful mother of children of earth, to guide, delight, nurture, and grow all the travelers on earth below, what they do not know, what they do not know. End poem. What did you think, Blue?
You know, you did a fantastic read of Daniel's poem. I really enjoyed this. I enjoyed so many things. You know, I loved how he caught the child's heart and the fascination with, you know, of us blowing dandelions. I remember my mom screaming, "You're going to put more weeds in the yard!" You know, but, you know, being a kid, that is just too tempting. It's just like telling you not to take a piece of candy out of a glass bowl. And this I thought was so beautiful. Through the stained glass window of our eyes, an energy transformation to the wind streams the world. And you do, you know, it's our thoughts when we're watching it, where it's going, and the seeds, you know, of course, later on we plant different types of seeds, but this was just wonderfully penned. Good read, Grace.
Thank you, Leah. And Naomi, what did you think?
Yeah, well, me too. What stuck out, well, first of all, this is just amazing writing here. But me too, what stuck out was the youth, the reference to youth, you know, guidance for the youth, seeds of life, a time of freedom to look back on, a time of invincible hope, floating with discovery, to land where the air may take. What beautiful lines those are, you know, to describe, you know, just youth and how we feel invincible and, you know, we're just like free-falling there, you know, just like those dandelions just floating around and, you know, not thinking about the future. And then the reference to mother, to the son as the mother, the watchful mother, I just thought that was such a beautiful metaphor there. Just a beautiful ride all through, you know, with such depth to it too. You know, you can really take an amazing message out of this. Profound message. So I just thought Daniel did an amazing job here.
Great comment. Thank you, Naomi. And Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, this is absolutely beautiful. I love the delicate language used throughout, a time of invincible hope floating with discovery to land where the air may take, oh, the sun, watchful mother of the children of the earth. I like how this is about the innocence of childhood and discovery, but also about the way that Mother Nature watches over her children. So beautifully written and very well done.
Thank you, Pam. Okay, well, we've got 4 minutes left. I'm not going to try and push a poem through. Pam, would you like to say anything about any upcoming shows?
Yes, absolutely. 30 minutes after this show ends, we have After Midnight with Rex and Pam with poetry inspired by, I don't remember what it's inspired by, but the guy who directed The Shining, quotes from him, Stanley Kubrick. I did want to mention that there's a contest being ran by Dexter Bailey, Duke of St. STP, Dex Bailey, for this week's Double Helix, and it's the 5th annual Autism Awareness Show by Late Night Poets, and it's open to pre-writes. That's a very important show and a very important contest close to my heart. So I hope people will be inspired. Then, of course, as I always say, keep an eye out on all the contests and topic boards put up by our late night poets, hosts, and hostesses, because you're sure to find something to inspire.
Absolutely. Thank you, Pam. Okay, we've got one last poem, sorry to squeeze in, if you guys wouldn't mind. Lee, would you mind reading for Rosie?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
And this is titled Somewhere in Between by Rosie. I can hear their voices whispering to me. I know them very well, although I cannot really see. Can't see their faces, but I feel their every tone. I hear them clearly when I'm by myself, alone. It's unknown how many of them got into my head or how to shoo them away from under my massive bed. I don't think they are dead or don't know what it is, the deal. Instead of silence, they kept me company. They're so damn real. Go ahead. Tell me I'm going crazy. For so long time I've been dealing with all of them at once. Mind is confused, extremely hazy. I only wish they would finally leave me by my own. I want to escape from this. My mind is really blown. Show me one healthy person I'd surely like to know. Or write, you can't. Told you, bro. We are all sick for sure. Did you realize that you're obscure? Be more mature. There is no such thing as pure. To this madness, there is no fucking cure. I will live with them forever until death do us part. I guess this is my life now. I'm not alone. Ciao. In the poem.
Wow, beautiful read. What a haunting poem of being mentally tormented by voices in your head. Such a sad, sad reality for so many. What did you think?
Yeah, well, sorry, yeah. Oh, was
go ahead.
It me?
No, I don't
no,
know
no.
who he said. I didn't hear him.
Go ahead.
Yeah,
I don't said.
Go ahead, Naomi.
It's me?
Yeah.
Well,
yes, go ahead.
I can relate to this a bit. I struggle with some mental issues sometimes, but I'm medicated. I'm okay. I'm not crazy.
No.
For a while I thought I was, but and my children thought I was too. You know, they thought they were losing their mother, but you know, I'm medicated today, and I'm doing well. But it took me quite a few years for them to find the good dosage, you know, to regulate me. But I don't have this kind, hearing. Well, when I go into maniac episodes, yeah, I do. I can start hearing voices. So I relate to this, and it is very, well, I think she expresses it so well in this, right? You know, it's you're just caught in it, and you don't know how to escape it, and it's just there, and it's just so it's like a claw, you know, around your brain, and it can't let go. And I think she just so well throughout this, right? You feel the desperation and everything. So just bravo, Rosie, for this, right? Oh, my gracious. It's really a poignant, raw, real right here.
Great comment. Thank you for sharing all that. Appreciate it. And Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, wonderful comment there, Naomi. I really like that Rosie wrote this dark, emotive right on the idea of falling apart, of feeling like losing yourself emotionally and mentally, and just really hits hard and is very well done.
Great comment, Pam. Well, thank you, everybody, for calling in to share your hearts, your minds, your voices, and most especially your time. Much love, poets.
Good night.
Good night, everybody. Thank you very much.
Good night, Naomi. Good night, Blue. Good night, Pam.